Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Your Next Episode with me, Louise.
And me, Amy.
Our guest today is a psychiatrist who's written a book all about talking with your kids about sex, self-confidence and healthy relationships. More about her in a bit. But Amy, where are you with all of that? Do you use proper biological correct terminology for your kids' body parts?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Good. Well done.
Yeah, I mean, my
front bottoms are Auntie Mary's here then. No.
No, it was just, it was quite instinctive. Listen, I'm not like an expert or anything. And I feel like, Leah's written a book, hasn't she? You know, and I'm going to be purchasing it very, very quickly because I feel like that thing of sort of like, oh, you frou-frou or your tuppence. Put it this way. They used to say that in the 80s. So that already tells you that that's not the route that we want to be going down. I've always used that terminology, to be honest.
What about you
when your kids were younger?
Well, when they were young, because they're in their 20s now. So, the youngest one's 15, but yeah. No, I didn't use proper word. Well, I said willy for penis, which I don't think is too terrible. But as a child, I referred to my vulva as my front bottom, and that's what we called it to the children, which is so stupid. It's not like, it's not a front bottom, is it? It's, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
But that's what it was called. But as a, as I was saying in the interview that we did with Dr. Leah, one of my friends calls her vulva her Auntie Mary, which is just...
like her own adult children.
No, she's always called it her Auntie Mary, and I think she's stuck with that.
But I hope she's not listening to this whilst driving. She's probably crashed into a tree or something. She's like, Louise, you're telling people that for. It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, it's
Is the most, have you heard of any really ridiculous names? I'll put you on the spot there. I can't think of any. I've heard some, but I can't remember.
Auntie Mary is
the
pretty
most
up there.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean,
isn't it?
That could be a drag queen or something, couldn't it?
I know. So, and what are your thoughts around discussing sex with your children?
Yeah.
Is that.
Because when I lived in London, before I had kids, before I got married, I did a lot of youth work, work with deaf children, actually. Mm. So I was learning to sign. I was doing my BSL sort of level 1, 2 and 3. And we had a lot of, a lot of kind of heavy stuff go down. It was sort of Battersea. I worked in a Battersea sort of estate for ones with council. And so there were lots and lots of issues sort of there with children that sort of, 13, 14, 15, a lot of disclosures, a lot of, safety measures, put in place with families and stuff like that, and disclosures. I feel like that gave me a little bit of a bit of a sort of heads up of making sure that my children, when it came to it, just age appropriate stuff.
Yeah.
But then what happens is you have your kids, don't you? And it's just sort of like a battle to get through the day first few years. And you, it's a bit, it's the driving analogy, isn't it? Mm. Like your mirror signal maneuver. Have I got the seat in the right position? Am I indicator? It's so many fucking things to remember, to do, to make sure that you, make sure that you don't make a big issue that they're not eating too much food, because you don't want that to be a big issue. Make sure that you don't make too much of an issue about screen time, because then they become everything feels like a battleground sometimes.
But
I think that just trying to be honest and trying to be transparent. I said to my daughter the other day, I've never parented a 9-year-old before. So I don't really know what I'm doing, you know, like, and it was my birthday as we, you know, and she was like, well, I've never been mothered by a 43-year-old before. So I, you know, like, and yeah, it's just.
But actually, I think that kind of honest conversation where you go, you know, is really important.
Yeah. You want to protect them though, don't you? Especially when you see them getting to 10 and 11 years old. You want to, you just want them to stay innocent. You want, and it's hard, but in the long term, you need to put your big girl pants on and do it, don't you?
So, you know, anybody listening now who's got young children or teenagers, and you're thinking, oh, I don't, you know, I'll bury my head in the sand a little bit about this and just, you know, carry on letting, you know, not discussing it. You know, the interview with Dr. Leah Leese, is coming up. She's a psychiatrist and she's been working with families since the beginning of her psychiatric career. And her goal is to help all parents raise strong, secure and resilient children who become strong, secure, resilient adults. And she's got a passion for working with children and teenagers around sex education. So she's chatted to us to tell us about her book, which is called No Shame, Real Talk with Your Kids About Sex, Self-Confidence and Healthy Relationships. And that's out on September the 22nd.
I've just pre-ordered it on Amazon.
And it's a really vital listen today, you know, and then, you know, you really need to, we all need to start having those conversations. So that's Dr. Leah Leese coming up in a moment.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, hello, Leah. How are
you? Hello. Very happy. You know, it's always technical difficulties to start.
Yeah, well, that's
it's
fine.
Like we're used to that now.
Yeah, we
that's
are.
Just the that's the COVID way.
Yes.
Just this, the obligatory tech fumble.
But the first, you know, Leah, can you tell us first of all, you know, where I'm a bit confused as to where the devil are you? I've tried to sort of look on Instagram to try and work out exactly where you are, but I'm not entirely sure. So.
I live in Southampton, New York, which is the Hamptons.
Ah,
and okay. I have a practice here for many years. Mm. And I'm assistant clinical professor at New York Medical College in Manhattan, mostly working at a city hospital called Metropolitan. And I did all, I'm basically, you know, you can take the girl out of Long Island, but you can't take Long Island out of the girl. So I have been a Long Islander from the start. And I do love it. Yeah. Where are you guys?
We're about an hour, just under an hour outside
of London. So there was a bit of confusion because I didn't look at the email properly, and you'd said 10 a.m. EST, which of course is 3 p.m. here. So we had a little bit of a scrabble around where I went, I've got the time wrong. And that was when I was just like, well, where is she exactly? I couldn't figure it out. But and can I just check that I'm saying your name name correctly. Dr. Leah Lease. Is it pronounced Lease? Is that right?
Yes.
Brilliant.
Exactly.
Good. I thought that was how it was pronounced. So I'm Will.
And how do you pronounce your names?
Louise. I'm Louise. Louise Daniels. And this is...
I'm Amy. Just like A-M-Y, but it's spelt differently because... My mother was insufferable.
Well, to be honest with you, my mother named me Leah, and then my husband had a Princess Leia fantasy, so he calls me Leia.
So we'll answer to everything, right?
Yeah. So now I have like half my friends calling me Leah and half calling me Leia, and they're like, what is your name? And I'm like, which one do you like better?
Can you tell us, first of all, about your work with children as regards sexuality?
Oh, great. Well, Louise, I started in the field at 15, where I was working as a volunteer at Hillside Hospital, which is a psychiatric hospital with children, at an ADHD camp I was volunteering. Wow. And then I kept going. And by 17, I was working on locked psychiatric units as a volunteer with my aunt Marie, who was a social worker. And I really loved it. And they said, well, you should be a social worker. And then my aunt's like, no way. She went to Barnard and she's like, she's going to be a psychiatrist. She's going to run this place. So with a lot of encouragement, I kept going. And then I did research on electroconvulsive therapy in children in college at Dartmouth. And I got a little scholarship to do it. And then I kept on going and was a neuroscience major in college. And then I started working at St. Vincent's at New York Medical College, which was the closest hospital to the World Trade Center and also was the middle of the HIV/AIDS crisis, was the main hospital for all of that. So I was tail end of that when people were still kind of getting very sick, but the whole treatments were changing, saw a lot of single sex or homosexuality, and really developed a passion for this idea of families are made up of so many different types of people. And then I started working with a lot of adopted families, and it just kept going. And so now here I am, the Me Too movement started, and I said, well, this is all because they were never raised right. The answer is the children, and we need to the manners, like, we don't teach them how to hold a knife and fork, but we don't give them bubkis else about how to behave in a sexual, sexual relationships. Yeah. And we just leave them to their own devices. And so they find out from pornography, which is not exactly the right way to learn how to treat someone. So, then I got a bee in my bonnet and I wrote this book, No Shame, Real Talk.
Which is out on the 22nd of September.
And,
And so who is that? Who is that book for? Is it for parents or?
Yes, it's a parenting book. So it's really to help parents raise children. And at its heart, it's a book about communication. So like, how do you communicate with your children about sex and sexuality? How do you face your own, how to take the shame and blame out of your game, And then, when you do that, how do you pass down all this wisdom and really help them develop their own healthy relationships and also protect them from being assaulted or assaulting or STDs or pregnancy. But it's not about fear mongering. It's really about like pleasure, consent, healthy relationships, communication skills, and also just dealing with your own awkwardness.
I mean, our listeners, Leah, will have children ranging from kind of babies right through to sort of young adults. I think it would be really helpful, if it's okay with you, to sort of go through a sexuality timeline of like childhood, because presumably, I mean, it begins from the very beginning, like you were saying before, like you're building those foundations, aren't you? I mean, could you condense that for us in a sort of bite size? Sure.
Yeah, I mean, people always ask me at what age you talk to children about sex. And I'm always like, as soon as they can talk, because it's the sex talks are ongoing. So it starts with simple things like actually naming the body parts for what they are, like testicles, penis, vulva, labia, vaginas,
so not
on the inside.
Not calling them silly names then, like
yes,
foo-foo or...
Yeah, like your jewel, your bug. You know,
one of my friends called hers her Auntie Mary, which I just think was just like, where did that come from? You know,
that's so British.
I know.
I'm gonna call my vulva my Auntie Mary just to really confuse everyone.
Absolutely. So teaching them the proper names for parts of their bodies,
the body, which shows in studies actually to be incredibly protective against sexual abuse and assault. Predators will not prey on children who know the names of these things because they think they'll, you know, be told out. And police and authority figures are more likely to believe them. If they say that boy touched me on my vulva, they're like, that kid knows what a vulva is. Yeah. They're not confused. You know?
Oh, yeah. So a biology savvy child is quite likely, yeah, to put off a predator. I hadn't thought of that.
It's
yeah.
so interesting because I remember I've got a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old, Leah, but when my 9-year-old girl was really young, and obviously, you know, we're just, nobody gives you an actual manual really what to do with these kids
until
when
now.
You get them home. Well, until now she's written it. But my husband, I guess just because that's what they did in the 80s, he'd be sort of like, oh, in the bath, let's wash your twopence or whatever, or your Auntie Mary. But obviously, as we've discovered, there is that ambiguity. And I remember sort of saying to him, let's wash your vagina. I mean, she's literally 6 months old, 7 months old. But even then, I was kind of, this is something that I'd come across before. And he was like, no need for this technical language, but actually, there's no ambiguity about who Auntie Mary is and where she went, and you know, like it's so important.
And then if you actually have an Auntie Mary, you're totally confused.
Absolutely. Oh, right. So yeah, and then so so we need to call body parts by their proper names, you know, from the word go. No silly names.
And it builds up. Then it's like, you know, then it's now you can think about teaching about hygiene, right? How to wipe properly for a boy, how to remove the foreskin and clean it. And then you keep on going. Then it's about how are babies made?
Yeah.
And you should never lie to your kids about that. I mean, just be factual. And when they're really young, you know, they don't know anything. So your awkwardness is all they see. So you just, you know, as soon as you think they're ready to handle it, you're getting out the books. It's not the stork. You're going through sperm, egg, just like a seed and a plant, just like you see, you know, if you ever go on a farm and they ever have a chance to see something being born, you know, it's just natural. This is how babies are born. This is, they're in the uterus. They're not in the stomach. You know, they come out the vagina. And you're just talking about it like very naturally, like you would how you make a cake or how you brush your teeth and why. Mm. And, you know, so that way, you know, and then of course there comes the day, you know, if they don't ask, you tell them. But there is the day when my daughter was 6 where she said, well, exactly how does the sperm get to the egg?
Get in
and I
there.
Was like, yes. I was like, aha, you know, and that's when you sort of layer in, okay, this is what sex is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then you can also layer in, okay, not all babies are made through sex. You know, there is some babies are made in test tubes, you know, it's called IVF. And then some babies get to their families through adoption. Like they have a birth mother and then they have their mother and they have a birth father and they have their father, and they're not the same person. So, you know, then you can really have fun with it, and they kind of blow their little minds because they're like, wow.
Would you recommend with small children then, when they're asking about how babies are made, getting like a picture book? You know, there's loads of books out now, aren't there? Would you, is that a good, I suppose it'd be a good way to start the conversation.
It's so amazing because it's hard to know exactly what to say. I mean, the language, because you're not, you know, a developmental psychologist to know like what language they'll understand. Find somebody who is, who wrote a book, you know, and then you'll have the right language, and the pictures, you know, will engage them. So they loved, when I was pregnant, my older daughter loved to look at, you know, pictures of the developing baby. She was like, oh, this is what it looks like now. This is what it looks like now.
Wow.
So, you know, it really keeps them engaged in the whole thing. And then, you know, they'll ask about, okay, how does that happen? And you just say, you know, the penis and the vagina and the vulva, and it gets inserted and it feels really good. Mm-hmm. And then the seed comes out and that's called the sperm. You know, and then they're like, okay, I get that. And then, you know, it's like, you know, but you say, hey, it feels really good. So people don't always just do it to make babies. They also do it because it's fun. Mm. And that's where the whole concept of pleasure comes in.
And that's when you get a phone call from the school saying, Mrs. Cooper, your daughter has been...
Well, I would like to just ask you about that because... it's not something that, you know, so my children are in their 20s, my older children. Now, that was not something that the other mothers would have been very happy about saying.
Yes, true.
You know, that it's fun and you're meant to enjoy it. When my daughter was in her teens and we had a conversation about sex and I, we were talking about sort of, I wanted her to... what I said to her was, it should be really good fun and it should, you know, you should really enjoy it. And if you're not enjoying it, that's an indication, you know, if you're feeling you're going to do something that you're not ready for and you're not really like wanting to do it, then that's telling you that it's the wrong person, the wrong situation, the wrong time, because it should be good fun and, you know, you should really enjoy it. And the other mothers, so she must have been about 13 or 14, and the other mothers, friends of hers, were all pretty pissed off with me because they weren't happy. They didn't think we should be telling our daughters that they should be enjoying sex. And I mean, so...
Isn't that misogynist? It's very, very rude.
So we're talking about, she's 25 now, so we're talking about, you know, 12 years ago. And I know things have changed a bit, but actually, I think people are still really uncomfortable about telling their children that sex is something enjoyable, and telling girls that sex is enjoyable.
Yeah, well, female pleasure has always been something that nobody wants to talk about. Mm. I have a couple thoughts. The first is, don't get me wrong, you have to tell your kids it's something you do when you're an adult or when you're older and you're ready because, you know, your body needs to be ready. Yeah, of course. I mean, I just want to be clear.
Absolutely.
But what you did was perfect. I love it. I think you're ahead of your time.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I've stuck to that and I really feel that I was ahead of my time. But at the time, people were cross with me, yeah. But sorry, and carry on.
And, you know, at its heart, I think there is a little bit of this fear of women embracing their sexual power. I think men and society is generally scared because women are so powerful because they can do something that is so amazing. And, you know, I mean, not just multiply orgasm, but give birth. Mm. And women may not be as strong physically, but they are way stronger in terms of their health parameters. They live longer. They look at how they're doing with coronavirus compared to men. Mm. So, you know, it's kind of like men burn bright, but women last way longer. And, you know, I think there is a little bit of a fear of embracing that power in women. And
women being
know.
Afraid of embracing that power of women. I mean, what are we so afraid of that we're going to take over the fucking world? Do you know what I mean? Like, we need to have this conversation with our young girls and young boys, actually.
And also the conversation for boys. And I love when women, mothers, sit down their boys and tell their boys this. And they all should. It's in my book. Which is, if she is not really wanting to have sex, if she is not really enjoying it, you should not be doing it. Like, you've not figured it out. Like, figure out where the magic button is. Like, figure out how to do it. You know, take your time. You shouldn't have to push them into it. If you are, then
absolutely. My kids kind of play fight a lot, you know. Siblings do that a lot, but I sometimes say to my older girl when she's literally punching the shit out of her younger brother, and I'm like, right, are we both enjoying this game? Yeah, and that goes back to consent, doesn't it? And within that parameter of play, like, no, he's crying now. Yeah. No, you're hurting him now. And I guess it's really teaching them about boundaries, isn't it?
Mm. Very well done. I mean, and the boundary discussion you brought up is so important because boundaries start as soon as they can talk, even before. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, this is my body. This is the other child's body. I don't have the right to come into that space unless I'm welcome. Mm-hmm. And that is something that can be taught from very early on. Even things like, you know, I'm in the bathroom right now. I'm trying to use the bathroom. Like,
yeah,
this is my boundary. Like, you need to stay outside. Like, I know you need something. But it starts there, and it's like,
yeah. Oh, shit,
you
know, Leah, I'm not doing very well on that front. I rarely get to
have a
bowel movement on my own, quite frankly. Right, I'll work on that, Leah.
Yeah. And also, I wanted to ask you about masturbation, and because that is something that I think parents find very difficult to talk to their children about. And presumably, you never shame it. You should talk about it, you know, encourage it, presumably, and just explain that it's something that you do privately. Or, you know,
yes.
How do you have conversations around that?
It's interesting because the Northern European approach to masturbation is slightly different from even the most liberal American approach, which is that in Northern European countries, they completely ignore children who are masturbating, even from a very young age. They never say a word about it. They don't even say do it in private. They literally just let them do it at the dinner table. And it's up to all. It's like up to all the adults to ignore it. And what they're trying to do is to say to the young kid, like, everybody's ignoring you right now. Pick up those subtle cues and realize it's not something we do at dinner, right? Mm-hmm. And in America, we have a little different approach. I mean, the liberal parents, which are, you know, you see your kid masturbating, you say, it's great, you know, it's healthy, please do it privately, yeah, which is the approach I like to take. And then there's, of course, the conservative approach, which is to tell them it's bad or push their hands away or smack their hands or, you know, when a little kid, like a little baby's, you know, touching his penis and the mom smacks a hand away. And, you know, or they just say, no, no, no. And, you know, obviously I don't think that's the right approach because, you know, it makes them feel shame.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like the middle ground. I think that's the right way. But that, of course, means you have to give your kid privacy and knock because the last thing you want to do is to walk in on them. So, like, you know, respect the child boundaries. If they're in there on their own and you're not sure what they're doing, don't try to catch them. Just knock and be like, well, I'm coming up. Or be like, I'm coming up the stairs now, you know. Yes. And, you know, give them some time to figure out what you know, how to end the situation they're in. And I think that's, you know, give them plenty of time to explore their bodies because it's only through self-exploration can you ever really teach anybody else how to please you. And it's also the foundation of sexual pleasure. So I can't tell you how many kids in my practice have never masturbated, girls. It's crazy. I'm just like, you know, 15, 16, and they're having sex and they still have never masturbated.
Is that because they've been told that it's a naughty, dirty thing to do? That's why they've never done it.
Yeah, they've never been given license, or they've told them it's, or like, they'll say things to me like, well, why would I try to do that to myself when I get someone to do it for me? And I'm like, because they will have no idea what to do if you don't know what to do.
I'm really surprised by that because I assumed that it was just something that,
like, a natural,
everybody did naturally
thing,
from being quite sort of young, you know. But I'm just going to tell you another quick story. I don't want to make it all about me, but my younger child, when he had sex education at school in year six, so he was 10 or 11, and he came out and said.
He didn't come out as a homosexual.
No, he came out of school.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know what had been said or how it had been said, but he was under the impression, first of all, that girls don't masturbate, but boys do, and that boys need to masturbate and need to have sex, but girls don't, and they don't really enjoy it. So I had to, obviously, I literally stopped him in the street, set him straight. But then I WhatsApped the mums that are, you know, my friends who had girls, and I said, just a heads up, I don't know, you know, this is what Ned's come home saying, so you might want to talk to the girls, but they were all, the impression I got was that they were all quite happy that their girls had been told that they shouldn't be masturbate, that
they don't need to have,
I mean, and that wasn't that long ago, that was like 5 years ago, so
this reminds me of the sex ed class in the Wonder Years with the gym teacher. I mean, do you remember that when he, but I have to say, like, that's terrible.
I know.
Oh my God, these poor young girls.
But also, I said to him at the time, I said, everybody masturbates. And I said, you know, and people might not want to talk about it, and that's up to them. But if they, you know, if they say they don't, they're lying, because they do. Everybody does it. So there we go. But now you're saying that you're, you know, coming across girls who don't. So that that's what I meant. But that's what really surprises me, because I just thought, well, everybody does, and people just lie about it because they're ashamed, or, you know.
Yeah, but, well, there are girls who don't, and unfortunately, these are the same girls who have a lot of problems having orgasms later on. And they also are the same girls who are having sex for the wrong reason, I find.
Right.
Like, yeah, most of them are having sex because they want attention and not because they're getting anything from it, because, you know, they're complaining to me that it hurts or it's not right. And I think it's all this culture of shame and that how much they've internalized.
I think there's going to be so many people listening to this who are sort of maybe having those, you know, just those little aha light bulb moments. So, yeah, this is what it's about, isn't it? I guess talking about this, making it just part of the conversation. I know it would probably be excruciating for, you know, for you to have that conversation all of a sudden now with a 15-year-old when you've never mentioned it before. But, yeah.
Well, that's the problem. You know, this is what I'm trying to change. It's like, your first sex talk should be at 12 or 13. I mean, this should have been going on from the start. So, and also, you know, I'm very sex positive, as you can imagine, as a parent. And I sit my kids down and talk to them about, I talked to my 10-year-old about menstruation the other day, and she had no recollection of it. She was like, what are you talking about? I was like, how many times have we talked about this? I'm like, it's amazing to me how many times you have to say the same thing.
Before it goes through, before it clicks through,
So you can't just be like, oh, I checked that box, I'm good for another 5 years.
No, you've got to keep on having those conversations. And so, and then can we also talk about what, you know, conversations, how do you have conversations around sort of body positivity, you know, other things that come up, like, you know, sexual orientation, gender identity. Is it just about just being honest all of the time and just being open and having those conversations?
Well, Louise, it sounds like you do that a lot of that already. But I also think it's about finding role models. I always say, like, children learn the most from role models. So if you have, you know, a gay couple in your community that you like, have that couple take your kid out to breakfast, to lunch, whatever, and explain to them how they came to be gay. Like, did, you know, like, did they know it when they were little? Like, how did they, you know, this is a teenager, obviously not like a 6-year-old, but like, you know, and or a 12-year-old, whatever is perfect time, you know, and just say, like, this is my story. And like, then I've met this man and I fell in love and we got married or whatever the story is. And it's like, they'll learn from seeing in the community positive role models of different types, adopted kids. You know, you want to try to expose them if you can to actual humans, because that's the most relatable. But obviously you can't always do that. But if you can, you know, that's the best way. Now, if you can't, because you don't have access to that, it's like, okay, then it's about maybe buying a book with a character that has that, you know, person in it. Or it's just about watching a documentary, you know, about a certain kind of thing, like, you know, or talking about Elton John and his husband and two babies and how he, you know, his journey. Like, you know, you could just talk about it and use examples.
And normalizing it, I suppose that's, you know, okay. Because, you know, children have, you know, more freedom to explore sexual orientation and gender identity now than they did, you know, like when I was younger. And with
I always try to take the gendered language out of my discussion about their future partners.
Right.
So I'll say, someday when you get married to your husband or wife, I'll say things like your future partner. I try not to say boyfriend or girlfriend. I try not to say, you know, I really try. And then, you know, one time I said, one day when you marry your prince, and then I said, or princess, because I really said it.
How old are your kids, Leah?
7 and 10.
7 and 10, both girls.
Yeah, and my older one said, it's definitely going to be a prince. And my other one said, I'm never getting married. That was so funny.
And the clients that you have, do they range in age and gender? Yeah.
Yes. I've seen it all.
Yeah.
Sounds like you have.
And, you know, transgender, everything. I mean, I've seen it all. And And, you know, I've seen every kid. I mean, I see adults too, but children are my passion.
Mm, right.
Thank you so much. I mean, like I said, I think there's going to be so many people who, you know, this is the great thing about podcasts, isn't it? You listen to a conversation like this, then you type somebody's name into Instagram or what have you done? Do you do many talks? Or where else can people find you?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah. You know, it's shamelesspsychiatrist.com or drlealise.com. And I have, you know, so many resources on there from Psychology Today, my blogs, the other podcasts. And you know, so you can find a lot of information there. And Instagram is Shameless Psychiatrist. Yeah. And, you know, I just love this job. I think I'm the luckiest person on the planet to be able to do this. Yeah.
And can I just ask just quickly, what I'd just like for anybody listening who's, you know, what would you say to a parent who's listening, who's thinking, no, I don't want to talk about any of this with my child. I don't want to encourage my children to have sex or to think about it. And I'm uncomfortable with it. And, you know, how is that harmful?
I can give you, children who aren't given adequate sex education are much more likely to get an STD or be pregnant. You know, the studies are conclusive on that. So you're actually leaving sex education up to an educator, possibly a gym teacher in the US, you know, who will give your kid the complete wrong information. Or guess what? Ding, ding, ding. Pornography.
Yeah. That's where they're going to get it. Huge issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's huge. I mean, I can't even tell you. And people... children who are large consumers of pornography are actually more likely to be aggressive in their sexual encounters than children who do not view a large amount of pornography. And the only way to ensure that is obviously trying to put parental controls on things. But once they hit a certain age, you can't do that. It's more of like an open dialogue with your kids about like, hey, like you can watch it, you know, because I can't stop you. But really try to watch what you're watching because it's not good for you. And I always say, like, look at, like, you know when you're a kid and you see, like, the Poltergeist and you're, like, freaked out for days? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, haunted, yeah.
Watching violent pornography can really be like that for young, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-olds. I have seen it absolutely haunt them and come to me totally, and they can't tell their parents, totally disturbed by what they saw, totally confused about their own sexuality, what their penis is supposed to look like, you know, how they're supposed to behave. And it goes against everything they instinctually understand about life, like gentle, kind. And it just upsets them.
It must be so traumatic for them. But I'm thinking, because even as you're talking about that now, I'm kind of thinking about a few things, like not only if you talk to your children about these things, and I, you know, like, as I've got young ones, I'm kind of like, I know what we're going to be discussing around the dinner table tonight. and it is making me think, God, like, it's a bit like just putting them in a car and just saying, well, figure it out, you know, like, you've seen, not that they've seen me having sex, but they've seen me driving a car. But do you know what I mean? Like, other people are driving around out there in this metaphorical sexual world, probably have not had these conversations with their parents from this young. So it's almost like protection thing for themselves, isn't it?
Yeah, so we do need to have that conversation then, presumably, about the about mainstream porn. And what do we need to say to them?
That these are actors, you know, that consent happens off stage, right? Or off screen, but it happens. That they already have, you know, the contraceptive and STD testing done majority of the time. And that... And that, you know, a lot of these sex acts are fringe sex acts and they're not where you start, you know, at all. You know, you always start gentle. You always start soft. You know, no girl, despite what you want to see pornography, no 16, 17, 18-year-old girl wants to be hit or slapped. They just don't. So, you know, you might see it. Don't do it. Yeah. And that's the conversation, you know. Yeah. And if it disturbs you, turn it off and find something else, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually bumped into a friend of mine. I won't name them and shame them. She's a governor at a secondary school. And she was saying that the amount of girls who have, like, rectal injuries. Yeah. Mm. I don't know why I'm whispering because I've got a microphone right near my butt, and it's sort of like because they don't. Yeah, because boys watching porn,
yes,
and it's anal, yep, anal, and then the girls are like, if they don't do that, then they're, yep, X, Y, Z, and it, you know, like it's a mess, isn't it? But without that education, without a girl in that situation being able to go, well, I'm not doing that. Mm. I don't give a shit about what you say, yeah, to me, or you know, I don't.
Well, you should talk to your teenage girl, yeah, about anal sex, or your teenage boy, because guess what?
Yeah.
He might be homosexual,
yeah,
and you're not prepping him for, you know, what's coming. Mm. So really, it's all gender. Just be inclusive. Again, it's another lesson to us all. Don't make assumptions. Mm. And, you know, even if he's not homosexual, he might experiment. So, you know, it's like, you know, you got to just say, like, you know, it really, if you want to go there, which I highly suggest you wait on that one because it's a big step.
Mm.
But, you know, lube and one little finger. It starts there. Like, yeah, it's, you know, like, don't start with the whole enchilada. Like, no, start with like a little mini top. You know? Like, you know.
Yeah, and I just think
one finger.
Spelling it out. Because, and again, this was a conversation that I had with, he's in his 20s now, but when he was about 16, I just said to him, don't, you know, no girl wants to have your cock up her ass. I just said that. And I said, you know, like, not because I was talking about girls of his, yeah, his sort of age, mm-hmm, and you know, and I just said, so, you know, just don't even ask. No. Or, and if, you know, if a girl's saying that, yeah, you know, she's really keen to do that, she's probably, yeah, I would just be very wary, mm, because I think perhaps she's doing that for the wrong reasons, yeah, at this age, mm-hmm, and at this stage, and you know, so again, yeah, it was something that I was quite obviously quite happy to just say outright. But you know, yeah, so all of these conversations need to be had because we know, I can't remember the statistics now, but we know that, you know, children sort of 10 or 11 are watching porn, mm, you know, and
it's just that with the smartphone, mm, and you know, the kids in secondary school, yeah, over here, our education
and
system,
they might turn up at school and someone goes, here, look at this, you know, mm, not, maybe they're not sitting down and actively logging on and looking for it, but so there's no point burying your head in the sand, is there, as a parent? You've got, no, to have these conversations.
Even if you locked in all your kids' technology, which I advise you do, obviously, but, mm, even if you do, no, you don't know who's going to show it to.
No, of course, no, absolutely, yeah, you're right.
Which so is your, why, you know,
yeah, so your book is, I mean, I think very, very much needed,
yeah,
isn't it? So, and, you know, will give give parents, yeah, that sort of guiding, helping hand to start those conversations and how to do it. And
yeah, it's called No Shame, Real Talk with Your Kids About Sex, Self-Confidence and Healthy Relationships. So,
yeah. Yeah. And is it a manual, Leah, or is it?
No, it's such a fun. I wrote it. And I had my friend who's a sex researcher edit it. And then I looked at it and I was like, man, this is a little dry. Mm. So then I had my friend Jenny Diaz, who is a marketing person, go through and just make it fun. So it's actually really
perfect.
Fun.
Okay.
It reads so fun. It's like reads like your best friend.
Brilliant.
You know,
brilliant.
You know, like you guys, how you guys talk.
Yeah. it's been so nice to chat with you. And, you, yeah, know, even though I know that some people have probably listened to this and, you know, maybe a conversation, maybe there's an incident that's happened, you know, that, you know, all the kids have gone back to school and, you know, all they've had the summer to kind of mature a bit and they've all been on lockdown and then they've got back and, you know, and maybe it is a bit triggering for some people listening to this because they've got this shit to deal with and it is something to deal with if you've not been dealing with it since 4 and 5 years old. But don't fear, don't worry. I think that your book is a really good resource, mm, to have, you know, in your tool belt,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and we'll put all the details for how to get your book and to follow you on Instagram and stuff as well on the show notes. So thank you so much, Leah.
Lovely to chat to you.
Thanks, I'm glad to hang out with the other side of the Atlantic.
Produced by Louise Daniels. Visit louise-daniels.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.